Reading 3. No, there isn't much we do know, says Mrs. Bird, but what little there is she ought to know. I felt as if she ought to when she first came here. Well, I didn't feel quite right about it, said Mrs. Dennison, but I kept hoping it might stop, and anyway that it might never trouble her. And you had put so much in the house, and we needed the money. And I didn't know but she might be nervous and think she couldn't come, and I didn't want to take a man boarder. And aside from the money, we were very anxious to have you come, my dear, says Mrs. Byrne. Yes, says Mrs. Dennison. We wanted the young company in the house. We were lonesome, and we both of us took a great liking to you the minute we set eyes on you. And I guess they meant what they said, both of them. They were beautiful women, and nobody could be any kinder to me than they were, and I never blamed them for not telling me before. And as they said, there wasn't really much to tell. They hadn't any sooner fairly bought the house and moved into it than they began to see and hear things. Mrs. Bird said they were sitting together in the sitting room one evening when they heard it the first time. She said her sister was knitting lace. Mrs. Dennison made beautiful knitted lace, and she was reading the Missionary Herald. Mrs. Bird was very much interested in mission work, when all of a sudden they heard something. She heard it first, and she laid down her Missionary Herald and listened. And then Mrs. Dennison, she saw her listening, and she drops her lace. "What is it you are listening to, Abby?" says she. Then it came again, and they both heard, and the cold shivers went down their backs to hear it, though they didn't know why. "It's the cat, isn't it?" says Mrs. Bird. "It isn't any cat," says Mrs. Dennison. "Oh, I guess it must be the cat. Maybe she's got a mouse," says Mrs. Bird, real cheerful, to calm down Mrs. Dennison, for she saw she was most scared to death, and she was always afraid of her fainting away. Then she opens the door and calls, "Kitty! Kitty, kitty!" They had brought their cat with them in a basket when they came to East Wilmington to live. It was a real handsome tiger cat, a Tommy, and he knew a lot. Well, she called, "Kitty, kitty, kitty!" And sure enough, the kitty came. And when he came in the door, he gave a big yawl that didn't sound unlike what they had heard. "There, sister, here he is. You see it was the cat," says Mrs. Bird. "Poor kitty." But Mrs. Dennison, she eyed the cat, and she gave a great screech. "What's that? What's that?" says she. "What's what?" says Mrs. Bird, pretending to herself that she didn't see what her sister meant. "Something's got hold of that cat's tail," says Mrs. Dennison. "Something's got hold of his tail. It's pulled straight out, and he can't get away. Just hear him yawl." "It isn't anything," says Mrs. Bird. But even as she said that, she could see a little hand holding fast to that cat's tail. And then the child seemed to sort of clear out of the dimness behind the hand, and the child was sort of laughing then, instead of looking sad, and she said that was a great deal worse. She said that laugh was the most awful and the saddest thing she ever heard. Well, she was so dumbfounded that she didn't know what to do, and she couldn't sense at first that it was anything supernatural. She thought it must be one of the neighbors' children, who had run away and was making free of their house and was teasing their cat, and that they must be just nervous to feel so upset by it. So she speaks up, sort of sharp. "Don't you know that you mustn't pull the kitty's tail?" says she. "Don't you know you hurt the poor kitty? And she'll scratch you if you don't take care. Poor kitty, you mustn't hurt her." And with that, she said the child stopped pulling that cat's tail and went to stroking her, just as soft and pitiful. And the cat put his back up and rubbed and purred as if he liked it. The cat never seemed a mite afraid, and that seemed queer, for I had always heard that animals were dreadfully afraid of ghosts. But then, that was a pretty harmless little sort of ghost. Well, Mrs. Bird said the child stroked that cat, while she and Mrs. Dennison stood watching it and holding on to each other, for no matter how hard they tried to think it was all right, it didn't look right. Finally, Mrs. Dennison, she spoke. "What's your name, little girl?" says she. Then the child looks up and stops stroking the cat and says she can't find her mother. Just the way she said it to me. Then Mrs. Dennison, she gave such a gasp that Mrs. Bird thought she was going to faint away, but she didn't. "Well, who is your mother?" says she. But the child just says again, "I can't find my mother. I can't find my mother." "Where do you live, dear?" says Mrs. Bird. "I can't find my mother," says the child. Well, that was the way it was. Nothing happened. Those two women stood there hanging on to each other, and the child stood in front of them, and they asked her questions. And everything she would say was, "I can't find my mother." Then Mrs. Bird tried to catch hold of the child, for she thought, in spite of what she saw, that perhaps she was nervous and it was a real child, only perhaps not quite right in its head, that had run away in her little nightgown after she had been put to bed. She tried to catch the child. She had an idea of putting a shawl around it and going out. She was such a little thing, she could have carried her easy enough, and trying to find out to which of the neighbors she belonged. But the minute she moved to the child, there wasn't any child there. There was only that little voice seeming to come from nothing, saying, "I can't find my mother," and presently that died away. Well, that same thing kept happening, or something very much the same. Once in a while, Mrs. Bird would be washing dishes, and all at once, the child would be standing beside her with the dish towel, wiping them. Of course, that was terrible. Mrs. Bird would wash the dishes all over. Sometimes she didn't tell Mrs. Dennison it made her so nervous. Sometimes, when they were making cake, they would find the raisins all picked over. And sometimes little sticks of kindling wood would be found laying beside the kitchen stove. They never knew when they would come across that child. And always she kept saying over and over that she couldn't find her mother. They never tried talking to her. Except once in a while Mrs. Bird would get desperate and ask her something. But the child never seemed to hear. After they had told me all they had to tell about their experience with the child, they told me about the house and the people that had lived there before they did. It seemed something dreadful had happened in that house, and the land agent had never let on to them. I don't think they would have bought it if he had, no matter how cheap it was. For even if folks aren't really afraid of anything, they don't want to live in houses where such dreadful things have happened that you keep thinking about them. I know after they told me, I should never have stayed there another night if I hadn't thought so much of them. No matter how comfortable I was made, she always kept right on saying that she couldn't find her mother, and I never was nervous either. But I stayed. Of course it didn't happen in my room. If it had, I could not have stayed. "What was it?" asked Mrs. Emerson in an awed voice. "It was an awful thing. That child had lived in the house with her father and mother 2 years before. They had come, or the father had, from a real good family. He had a good situation. He was a drummer for a big leather house in the city, and they lived real pretty, with plenty to do with. But the mother was a real wicked woman. She was as handsome as a picture, and they said she came from good sort of people enough in Boston. But she was bad clean through, though she was real pretty spoken and most everybody liked her. She used to dress out and make a great show, and she never seemed to take much interest in the child, and folks began to say she wasn't treated right. The woman had a hard time keeping a girl. For some reason, one wouldn't stay. They would leave and then talk about her awfully, telling all kinds of things. People didn't believe it at first. Then they began to. They said that the woman made that little thing, though she wasn't much over 5 years old and small and babyish for her age, do most of the work, what there was done. They said the house used to look like a pigsty when she didn't have help. They said the little thing used to stand on a chair and wash dishes, and they'd seen her carrying in sticks of wood most as big as she was many a time, and they'd heard her mother scolding her. The woman was a fine singer, and had a voice like a screech owl when she scolded. The father was away most of the time, and when that happened he had been away out west for some weeks. There had been a married man hanging about the mother for some time, and folks had talked some, but they weren't sure there was anything wrong, and he was a man very high up, with money. So they kept pretty still for fear he would hear of it and make trouble for them, and of course nobody was sure, though folks did say afterward that the father of the child had ought to have been told. But that was very easy to say. It wouldn't have been so easy to find anybody who would have been willing to tell him such a thing as that, especially when they weren't any too sure. He set his eyes by his wife, too. They said all he seemed to think of was to earn money, to buy things to deck her out in. And he about worshipped the child, too. They said he was a real nice man. The men that are treated so bad mostly are real nice men. I've always noticed that. Well, one morning, that man that there had been whispers about was missing. He had been gone quite a while, though, before they really knew that he was missing, because he had gone away and told his wife that he had to go to New York on business and might be gone a week, and not to worry if he didn't get home, and not to worry if he didn't write, because he should be thinking from day to day that he might take the next train home and there would be no use in writing. So the wife waited, and she tried not to worry until it was 2 days over the week. Then she ran into her neighbor's and fainted dead away on the floor, and then they made inquiries and found out that he had skipped, with some money that didn't belong to him, too.